shut up!
This is Brock and Salk.
Brock Heward and Marcus. Sorry about just
Mike.
On Seattle Sports.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
You were not exactly Joe Cap there in the pocket.
Presented by Simply Seattle.
Now here are your hosts, Brock Heward and Mike Salk.
Well, for the most part, a lot of draft coverage today, and Brady Henderson's going to join us here in a few, call 30 minutes, to go even deeper into what the Seahawks did and the draft in general. But, Brock, we're watching a historic run right now for the Mariners. Their pitchers, what they're doing is ridiculous. It just feels like it's quality start after quality start. That one from Bryce Miller and the one five-inning, zero-run outing from George Kirby, the only two that were not quality starts in, like, the last 2.5 weeks. That's
crazy.
Insane.
Crazy.
You saw all the numbers over the weekend of the, like, 25 runs they'd given up in 15 games, where the next lowest in the league was in the high 40s. I mean, like, they're just outlier, historic, incredible stuff. But of all of it, of everything their pitching has done, you know what's been most impressive to me? It doesn't really feel out of the ordinary. It doesn't feel like anyone is doing anything that they're not perfectly capable of doing. They're just going out and being themselves every single time out. All right, maybe they're being more consistent than they will, and I'm not expecting this run to last forever. But does it feel like, oh, wow, this random dude has showed up and given you much more than he was ever supposed to? I mean, I guess you could say that about Hancock, but this guy was a first-round pick who's always been like a pretty good player and a pretty good pitcher and expected to be a pretty good major leaguer. So I don't feel like they're doing anything unusual.
Which is extraordinary with the numbers they're putting up. And it is, what's crazy is like Logan walked somebody yesterday and you're like, oh. Logan.
Right. What are you doing?
Like, how could you walk somebody?
Right.
Like, that's not what you do. That's not who you are. I mean, it honestly is, yeah, I think that's very well said. It's insane, the level of production, and yet it feels pretty normal for him. And when you got five pitchers like Luis does, and now you have extra ammunition and quivers in your, or arrows in your quiver like Logan has, and now you have a splitter that Bryce has, like, they've done what you want your hometown teams to do with their hometown talent. They've developed them. Kind of some of your questions back to me with all this raw, you know, goods that you just drafted and all this clay that you're going to mold. What is it going to look like? Who's going to develop? How are they going to perform? To watch the development of these guys, to not just, you know, stay status quo.
Well, Logan's probably the poster child for that because he just keeps adding more pitches and they keep being not just serviceable, but really like plus pitches in the big leagues. It's really amazing and a testament to him. Scott was talking about what that does for him.
Logan's got a lot of different weapons, so he can get you out multiple ways. And I think most starters have maybe plan A, plan B. Logan can go all kinds of places with you. We've seen the growth in the development of his cutter. Got a lot of outs with that again today. Got a lot of outs with his slider today. He worked his split. He can just do so many different things, which is much different than when he first showed up at the big leagues. You know, it's just a fastball, breaking ball pitcher. So doesn't shock me that those numbers are that abnormal, so to speak, because he has different ways to go about getting these guys out third time through the lineup.
Yeah, and I think that was what the question was about his ability to outperform baseball in going through a lineup a third time, which is essentially a no-no in today's game. Remember the Diamondbacks who they were just playing, that was like their entire strategy for the playoffs last year was, I don't care how deep we are into the game, we are not allowing our starting pitchers to see a batter a third time.
I know listening right now, I just know that there's baseball dads out there. There's youth baseball coaches out there. There's probably high school baseball coaches out there. I wish they all could have been privy to the conversation that Logan had with me and my son and just talking about the journey and not rushing it and not rushing it. And just, and he's like, Titus, when I was 14, like when I was four, I mean, I didn't know what I was doing. And I get to the big leagues, and, you know, as Scott just said, when he got to the big leagues, he was just kind of a fastball slider guy out of Stetson, a first-round pick with it.
And they brought him up a little early just because, like, well, he's got long arms, so he's going to fool people.
Yeah, exactly. He's got kind of a crazy angle, and he's right on top of you, and he's got that great, you know, distance and extension, so it feels like when he's releasing the ball, he's at, like, 54 feet, and it's awesome. But he's developed. Don't rush this. You know, Scott has said the same thing to me. Like, they have velo camp for like 20-year-olds, not 13-year-olds, not 10-year-olds, right? It's not time to, oh, I've got to develop my slider. And why don't I throw a cutter when I'm 11? And yeah, why don't you tear and blow out your elbow? Remember, it is a journey. And Logan is just, as you said, the poster child for so much of that.
So obviously the pitching has really been the thing that has carried them, and it's been elite, historic, et cetera. And I get a text here from the 253 and says, yet with all this pitching, why does it feel like a house of cards with the five guys under the Mendoza line in the offense? I actually don't feel that way at all. I gotta tell you, I don't feel like it's a house of cards. I feel like their offense hasn't actually clicked yet. So, I mean, it's you can look at it and say, oh, man, this isn't working offensively.
It doesn't feel inept.
And to an extent, you're right.
Because I think they're fifth fewest runs scored.
Yeah.
Right. Like last year, they ended up 12th in runs scored.
Yep.
Right. This year, they're 25th right now as you sit. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the White Sox and the A's are obviously going to be at the very bottom of all of that.
And I guess what I would say is they've yet to play more than one series in good weather. Right. I mean, that is going to be a factor in overall runs. It's why Brock, despite, as you said, being as low as they are in terms of runs scored, their run prevention has been unbelievable.
Unreal.
Right.
First in the league.
They have actually legitimately faced some pretty good pitching staffs, but whatever. The big factor for me is the guys you need to get hot haven't gotten high yet.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, again, if Julio does this for an entire season, the Mariners are probably not going to make the playoffs. If Julio turns into a 285 hitting, zero power, not a lot, that's not, they're not going to be a contender. Mm-hmm. They're probably not going to make the playoffs. They can't survive without Julio Rodriguez doing more damage than he's done so far. They can't survive without Mitch Garver and Jorge Polanco doing more damage than they've done so far. If those three guys don't do more damage, they will probably not make the playoffs. And yes, Brock, they'll be a bottom 10 offense in the league this year, no matter what else everyone else does.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that's going to happen based on the track record and ability level of those three players. They spent a lot of resources to bring in Garver and Polanco this offseason. The reason Eugenio's not here is so that they could go out and get guys like those two.
Yep.
So if they are going to succeed, Garver has to be better, Polanco has to be better, and Julio has to have more pop.
Mm-hmm.
But I would bet on all three of those things happening based on incredibly long track records on the first two and just the upside potential in what we've seen from Julio.
Well,
so
I think that's where that text comes from, because right now Haniger's given you, you know, what you hope from Haniger. Mm-hmm. Huge grand slam on Friday night to really win that game and seal that game.
And Cal's giving
your third base platoon has been awesome. Your third base platoon is, in fact, right now on a pace to be about a 4.5-5 WAR player.
But this team is built for Julio, Garver, and Polanco to do a lot more damage than they've done.
Correct.
And so House of Cards, again, I kind of see it as the opposite. I see them as kind of surviving a little bit right now while waiting for that offense to kind of kick in. And if the last few years have shown us anything, and last year and 2 years ago happened both seasons, maybe even 3 years ago, like they've kind of struggled up and down offensively April and May. Remember the first year they brought up Kelnick? They had like the world's worst offense at the time. And like a month later, they were just kind of doing their thing. 2 years ago, we had the same problem. And then there was, you know, that's the year they end up going to the playoffs. Last year, disaster at the beginning of the year. They end up finishing with the 12th best offense in the game. Like, I feel like I've just seen this movie now three straight years, and I'm going to assume that this one's going to be a fourth.
You guys spent some time talking about Gilbert. I didn't have this ready at the time, but at the beginning, there's a segment of this morning on MLB Network where our guy Mark DeRosa is talking about Gilbert.
Oh, yeah?
He's going to love just the way he explains it.
And then this freak, Logan Gilbert. Plate, we got Nuke LaLoosh coming at you. Elbows and tush.
It's like glass now. There's just limbs everywhere.
My God.
Elbows and tush.
Did you see Pitching Ninja's tweet as well?
This is the last thing you see before you strike out.
The great white shark.
That's what he's describing in this face.
Yeah.
It's like he's not even looking at you.
Awesome.
Pretty darn cool. Awesome. All right, great weekend for the Mariners as they win another 2 out of 3. That's 4 straight series wins. Atlanta rolls in tonight from old friend Eugenio Suarez. Yesterday to old associate, I guess, Jared Kelnick. I don't know if he's quite a friend to the people of Seattle in general, but J.K. will be back in the building for the next 3 as well. We'll be right back with everything you need to know. And our friend, Brady Henderson, in 20 minutes, Brock and Salk, Seattle Sports on 710.
Need to know.
15 minutes past every hour with Brock and Salk.
Here's what you need to know. Up first.
Well, we're just talking through it. It was a pretty good weekend for the Mariners, who win once again another series, this time over the defending NL champs, the Diamondbacks. They win the first two. Couldn't get it done, unfortunately, yesterday for the sweep. It is hard to pick up sweeps in this league, but it was right there for them, of course, because of the pitching. Hancock, ton of ground balls on Friday. Kirby, as good as I've ever seen on Saturday. And then Logan, I thought was excellent yesterday as well. Unfortunately, the bats just kind of went silent.
Yeah, that's how we're built. It is about our pitching and playing low-scoring games. But I say all that, and I've said it a couple times. You know, we've been on a nice run here. We've won four consecutive series, and I don't think we're even close to doing what I think we can do offensively. So we got room for improvement, got room for growth. Doesn't matter, get better. I say it all the time. That's where we're at. I do think we can get a lot better, because we're not going to be in every game 3-2, 2-1. You're going to have to find some days to win 7-5 or 7-6, you know, whatever it is. And we have the offense to do that, but you got to get multiple guys going at the same time. But the goal is to win series here and keep it rolling. We did that.
I think I kind of like the way Scott approaches that. It's sort of, hey, look, we're good. The pitching is incredible. The hitting has potential to be better than it is. We're doing what we're supposed to be doing by winning series, and overall, there is ways we can be better.
Yeah, especially offensively. I mean, there's huge opportunity there, as you said, for guys who have had pretty amazing track records of hitting with some power, and Polanco and Garver and Julio. And, you know, right now in the cold months of April and some of the difficult environments to hit in, it isn't as hot as it is going to get and will be. He's confident in that, man. He is steadfast in his patience. He does not change. I think he very much believes that there is a lot more horsepower in this offense, and you don't have to be top 10 offense. You don't have to be top 5 offense with the way that this pitching's going and the way the defense is complementing it as well, man. Just, you know, just be middle of the pack offensively, and you will be more than just
I think that's ultimately where they will fall. I'll tell you who's really just been a breath of fresh air has been Josh Rojas. Two more leadoff home runs over the weekend. After that, bats kind of went silent yesterday, but good on him. And a nice moment for the kid who was called up and finally got an opportunity yesterday, Leo Rivas. Triple in his first at bat. You don't see that every day.
No, you
don't. Ended up scoring, and unfortunately, it was all for naught.
Here's the second thing you need to know.
The draft's now in the rearview mirror, and we got a Seahawks roster, that's for sure. They had clear needs in this draft, and then they went about filling them. I really do like the thought process behind what they did. They took the best defensive player in the draft that they, according to their board on Thursday, and then they went offensive line, just like you know they needed to do. They went linebacker and tight end, two positions you know they needed to attack. Mm-hmm. And they went cornerback, and like, the fifth and sixth rounds? Yes, 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 and yes. No complaints, none.
Yeah, and it wasn't a tremendous like leap of faith. Wow, this guy's got one skill set here, or he's got this one unique gifting. No, all those guys up front got some serious power. I mean, Byron Murphy with the most of it. If we want to talk about thump and use a baseball analogy, those guys can hit it out of the park. Christian Haynes got some heavy hands and will mix it up. LaMea is a violent, violent guy. Jarrell, the very last pick, is obviously a project, but he's got some significant athleticism. And then you get speed. You get speed of linebacker, you get speed of corner. I think, you know, each of these little steps, Salk, each of these little pieces that start to complete the puzzle of Mike McDonald, his staff, working with John, of what they want to build this thing, becomes a little bit more clear. Speed on the perimeter, power on the inside. Huh. Feels a little bit like those Baltimore Ravens teams that have been so good that Mike McDonald
figure
coached.
We'll get a little bit more on this from Brady Henderson, who will join us here in just a couple of minutes. You mentioned what they did up front, and Christian Haynes is going to be the first guy you're going to turn to for some starting opportunities at guard. John Schneider on what they liked.
Initial quickness, length. He can get under people. He can roll his hips. Like the pass protection stuff is legit. I mean, lateral movement, stays in front of people. He's got strong hands. He's got anchor. He's just a good, really good football player. Really good, you know, so experienced. He knows like the nuances, and he had a great Zoom interview with Coach Huff. They love the football intelligence. So everybody was just really excited.
You know, he comes from Jim Mora's program out there.
Obviously.
Too, so.
Yeah. When in doubt, always want to go with a Jim Mora
guy. He's going to eat nails.
Usually.
Here's the third thing you need to know.
Brian Wu with a very good second rehab start, which is awesome news for him and for the Mariners. I don't know how that's going to work if and when he's ready after one or two more, because they certainly don't have anybody in this rotation right now that looks like they are going to need to be sent back down to AAA, but they'll figure that out because they're not going to go with six. These things tend to work themselves out. Unfortunately, not great news for Matt Brash. Shut down indefinitely after his last bullpen led to discomfort. He tried to, you know, kind of kick it up to 100, and it didn't end very well. Don't like the way that one's trending at all.
Kind of reading between the lines there, it isn't the ramping up. It was the coming down off of that, that he could ramp it all the way up, that he was touching 99, that he was unbelievably twitchy and explosive and everything he is with his delivery and his arm. Mm-hmm. But it was bouncing back from each of those efforts. It just did not feel good, did not feel right. That's kind of what it was the first time around. Now the second time around, he'll see his specialist down in Dallas this week, and we'll just kind of wait on the prognosis.
Yeah, don't like it, though. Nothing good there. Seahawks bring in Rashad Penny. John Schneider confirmed it yesterday and was asked whether there could be a little reunion.
Sure. Yeah, we had him in, talk with him. You know, it's good to see him again. He's such a great person, you know. Good to see him. Yeah, it's a possibility.
That'd be fun. They didn't draft a running back. They're going to need somebody else on this roster. Might as well be him. It's better than the Cowboys bringing back Zeke. Ugh. 10 Huskies found homes on draft day. Brock, another 4 signing deals afterwards, including right here in Seattle with Jack Westover. Pretty cool.
Pretty cool. Pretty amazing. Pretty amazing draft for this Pac-12 as well. Second most picks amongst all of the conferences, second only to the SEC, and they will go out with a blaze of glory. It'll be softball, by the way, and probably a Pac-12 team will win the softball World Series. Stanford's really good. UCLA's good. Washington's good. Huge opportunities there, and wouldn't that just be totally fitting? Feels like we've said that all season long. Football season, basketball season, women's basketball season, volleyball, draft. Why in the world is there not a conference of champions anymore? It's asinine.
All right, there you go. That is everything you need to know. 9:15 here on the Brock and Salk Show. Salk, that's the same thing you've said for the third straight year. Just swap out names of Frazier, Winker, Wong, and Hernandez. Yes, you're right. And Frazier went on to help you make the playoffs and win a playoff game. And Teo Hernandez helped you go on an unbelievable run in August last year. You're right. Mm-hmm. That is what I've said. And I was right. I don't know what else you're looking for. Yes, guys who have hit in the past will probably hit again in the future, assuming they're not toast. Unfortunately, in Wong's case, he was toast. Winker actually did some things to help. Unfortunately, he's kind of a head case. But, like, guys who can still hit can still hit.
Yeah.
That's what they do. And sometimes they go through slumps in early parts of the year, and it's really tough to watch. Sometimes they don't come out of it. Sometimes they do. That's just kind of baseball. So there you go. Mariners did come out of it last year. They did come out of it 2 years ago. They did come out of it 3 years ago. If you don't want to believe that, I guess that's okay. But the numbers kind of show that that's how that went down. I don't want to fight about it because I know I'm right and you're wrong. So we'll just move on. Brady Henderson going to join us next. It's Brock and Salk, Seattle Sports on 710, seattlesports.com.
This is Brock and Salk.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio. Weekdays 6 to 10.
On Seattle Sports and the Seattle Sports app.
The draft is now in the books, and so we get a pretty good sense of what this Seahawks roster will look like. Could they still make trades? Sure. We've seen things get done after the draft. We've seen things get done kind of in and around training camp as well. So it's not like this is now locked, but we got a pretty good sense, I would think, of what this team is going to look like, where they're going, and what it looks like short and long term. Brady Henderson's been covering all of it, Brock, for ESPN.com. Our buddy, the Hitman, he joins us right now. Hi, Brady. Hello. Good morning.
Michael, Brock, what's going on? Good morning. How you guys doing?
Did you sleep good Saturday night?
I sure did. Yes, I sure did. And I slept pretty well last night, too. Yeah, no, the draft is it's a grind. I mean, not nearly like it is for these NFL teams. But, it's a long weekend out there. But it's honestly one of the most fun things about the job is covering the draft. You're out there for 3 days, right next to the cafeteria, eating all the great NFL team food. And probably there's like the freshman 15, and there's the draft 3 or 4 for reporters. And so, yeah, I got to do some cardio to work off some of the weight I gained, but it's a lot of fun.
What was the best thing you ate over the weekend?
Oh boy. They had a tomahawk there. I can't remember what night it was, but they had some really nice steak there and some salmon. So yeah, they spare no expense.
Good.
Well, yeah.
Well, so now you, now that you're basically on their payroll, this should be an easy question. They've loaded you up with good food and, you know, kind of forced you to say nice things. What did you think about the draft overall?
Yeah, that said, I think they totally screwed up the draft. No, I'm kidding. I think they did a nice job. Now, I always go back to, like, you can end up looking very silly when you try to pass immediate judgment on a draft class, you know, 3 or 4 days after the fact. So, but with that qualifier in mind, I think you can boil this down to the simplest analysis, which is that their defense has been awful for the past few years, especially against the run. It's been the worst run defense over the last 2 years. And they got what is arguably the best defensive player in this draft, certainly the best defensive player on their board. And so, and this guy happens to be an excellent run defender, in addition to somebody who's got the juice to really be a difference maker in terms of a pass rusher as well. So, you typically, the majority of the judgment that you pass on a draft is going to be on the early round guys. And I'm still working through these day three picks to find out what they got there. But just based on the first pick that they made, the most important pick that they made, I think it's they did a really nice job there. I'm very interested to know what those offers look like to move back. Now, I've been told that the four teams that they were discussing trades with were Green Bay, Philadelphia, Pittsburgh, and Minnesota. Obviously, Minnesota traded up, you know, right into Jacksonville spot right after that. And, you know, as Brock Heward made the good point, that trade offer did not look all that appealing.
That trade,
that was the offer that was on the table.
Trade stunk. Yeah. If the Seahawks had taken that deal, I would have panned it the next day as an absolute joke. That was a terrible trade that Jacksonville agreed to.
Yeah, yeah. I think if you're the Seahawks there, the only reason that you trade back is to pick up another pick on day two. So either a second or third rounder. And that trade that Jacksonville made did not include any day two picks this year. Now, if I'm curious what that offer from Green Bay would have looked like, because if you look at where Green Bay was, they were 25th. You just look at the draft value chart, and I realize that NFL teams don't use the ones that we can see on online. But if the value was similar, so the difference between those two picks, 25 and 16, is roughly the equivalent of a late third, a late second round pick. And I think Green Bay had pick number 58, so maybe you would have had to throw in another pick there to make that equitable. I wonder if Green Bay's offer included that pick, and I wonder if so, if the Seahawks were tempted to take that one. But, you know, the other part of that equation when you're deciding whether or not to trade down if you're the Seahawks is, okay, if you're moving all the way back to 25, who's going to be available there at 25 that you really like? I mean, so Graham Barton went 26. He's the interior lineman, offensive lineman from Duke. Darius Robinson went one pick after him. Aside from that, it's wide receivers and cornerbacks and another offensive tackle. So guys that I don't know if they really would have been all that excited about. Yep. So I don't think you trade back just to trade back. And if Byron Murphy was there, he's your best defensive player on your board, then take him.
Brady, it felt like the most, it didn't feel like it was the most FaceTime that you guys had with Mike McDonald since his initial press conference and otherwise. What did you learn about the head coach over the course of 3 days?
Yeah, I think he's still kind of just getting used to being in this kind of spotlight. And, you know, somebody asked him at one point about the, quote unquote, redecorating that he did. And I don't know if he just was caught off guard by that because he was expecting to talk about the draft picks. But, you know, he kind of had to think about what he was going to say. And look, I think any coach in the NFL today or maybe in the next 10 years is not going to look as comfortable in that situation as Pete Carroll would. You know, Pete Carroll could, you know, talk his way out of anything and give a smooth answer, even if it wasn't always that substantial of an answer. But you know, I think McDonald is a first time guy. I think he's getting used to being in that kind of spotlight. And, you know, not that that was like a question that he was grilled on or anything, but it was, you know, that is kind of an awkward situation to have to talk about, given how passionate some fans are about what they did and even some former players. So, I'm sure you guys noticed the kind of fun video that the Seahawks posted on their website about, you know, it was McDonald and Schneider kind of walking through the building, and they were, you know, probably not coincidentally walking by a lot of these photos of these former players, just to make the point, I think, that, yeah, okay, they took the pictures down on that one wall, but if you walk throughout the building, there's pictures everywhere of, you know, Carroll era players. So it's not like they completely scrubbed the VMAC of all those images.
we knew kind of going into this, we're talking to Brady Henderson, of course, of ESPN.com. Brady, we knew going in the Seahawks had some specific needs. Did they address them?
They certainly did, yeah. Yeah, they did. I mean, if going into this draft, you would have said interior offensive line, defensive line, tight end, and linebacker, probably mostly in that order, but with interior offensive line being the first of those. And so they did that. I mean, those were their first four picks. You know, the Tyree Snipe pick in the fourth round was interesting, and I'm very curious to see what kind of player he is, just because generally, for whatever this is worth, generally, if you just look at kind of where guys are projected to go among the draft analysts, it looked like he was more later in day three, like more in the sixth round. Those were a couple of mock drafts I saw. I also texted a scout from another team who said he thought fourth round was a little early for him. And I wonder if maybe they anticipated a run on linebackers right after that, which that didn't really happen until the fifth round. So, you know, I'm curious about the thought process behind that pick and if they thought there was just no chance they were going to get him later. And if they didn't think the linebackers, you know, the group of linebackers at their next pick, you know, were all that special. And so, but, you know, he's got okay speed, okay size. He's a very productive player. And as Mike McDonald said, like, you know, the first thing that jumps out about him is his instincts. And they asked their linebackers to do a lot in that system. And they obviously feel like, you know, they saw some things on tape to where, you know, he could be a good fit for what they asked those guys to do. You know, if you know, your quote unquote reach is in the fourth round, if you draft a guy who was, you maybe had a fifth round grade on or a sixth round grade, that's not the end of the world. You just want to avoid doing that in the first and second and third rounds.
Okay. So selfishly here, who was the best interview of the eight of them? Who's going to be the best one on the Brock and Salk show in the months ahead leading up to training camp?
I think it's going to be Mike Jarrell. Yeah, their sixth round pick, the tackle they took from Finley. That guy was very entertaining. Now, some of the other guys, you know, they were all, I mean, there was a few others. I think A.J. Barner, you know, the first thing he says is, "I'm here to win championships." And he's just very confident and very eager to do whatever they ask him to do. And he talked about, "Hey, if you need me to catch 10 passes in a game, I'll do that. If you need me to block the C-gap, I'll do that." So he seems like a Jim Harbaugh, just, you know, team centric guy. But yeah, Mike Jarrell seemed like a fun, I think he's going to be a fun interview. And I'm very curious to look at what his college film looked like, because if you're going to draft a guy from a small school like that, Division II Finley, and NFL teams will tell you this, that if you're projecting that guy in the NFL, you've got to see him routinely dominate players at that level to think that he can, you know, handle what is going to be a massive jump in competition in the NFL. So I'm imagining that there's going to be some plays on tape that just look silly, that just look like, you know, a high school senior playing against the freshman team or something crazy like that. But I do know that his interview was probably the one that stood out in terms of entertainment value.
Well, and I would think that's, you know, a practice squad guy, right, where it's more of a long-term development plan. And I do wonder, there's, what, eight picks here. How many of these eight do you think make the team?
Well, certainly your first four. I mean, when you draft a guy in the fourth round, he's going to make your team unless something goes completely wrong. And then fifth rounders usually make the team as well, except – look, they were already pretty, you know, pretty stacked at wide receiver, at cornerback. And that's how you know that, you know, they weren't reaching for Nehemiah Pritchett or DJ James, because that was not a need at all. That was clearly a best player available with both those picks, with Pritchett at the very top of the fifth round and then with James in the sixth round. And so I think it's going to be hard for maybe both of those guys to make the team, just knowing that, you know, you got a pretty solid group of cornerbacks already. Now, if Pritchett was drafted, you know, later than what he was projected to go, then he might have a hard time sneaking him past waivers and getting him onto your practice squad. So I would probably say the first five guys. So Murphy, obviously Haynes, Knight, Barner, and then Pritchett. And then we'll see about the final three guys. But yeah, I mean, Mike Jarrell he's definitely a project when you talk about coming from that small school. But he's got some intriguing physical tools and you know, physical skills.
So you bring up the cornerbacks there and saying that they were already kind of set at corner. They draft two. You draft one, okay, fine. That tells me that they like the value somewhere, whatever. But you draft two cornerbacks from the same system, from the same school, who were generally thought of fairly similarly. if you're a cornerback on this team, is this a message to any of them, specifically knowing that there was even some talk about them maybe taking a corner in the first round, which, again, I thought would have been a ridiculous idea, but probably not an accident that that got out there and was information that was available to people?
Yeah, I don't think they were ever taking a cornerback that early. I think that would have been a situation where if they just got stuck at a spot where they couldn't trade back and you sort of had to, which would have not been ideal at all. But
well, let me be more direct. Is that a specific message to someone like Tariq Woolen?
Whether it was intentional or not, I think it could be. Yeah, I think every cornerback in that room, probably outside of Devin Witherspoon, has to be looking at that and saying, okay, you just drafted two guys, day three picks, but you drafted two guys at what was already a pretty well stocked position. I would say that there is a message sent there, even if it was unintentional. I think Woolen has got to be one of the more fascinating guys on this roster. When you guys do your most, your countdown to the most intriguing Seahawks, I'm guessing he's going to be up there in the top two or three or four players, just because we all saw what happened last year, that he did not take that step. And I think there was a thought among some people in the building that, maybe read too many of his press clippings from his rookie season. And that was a guy that, success came upon him and fame came upon him like very quickly. He's a fifth round pick from a smaller school who only played cornerback for a season or two in college. And then all of a sudden he's a Pro Bowler. I think a lot of rookies in his situation might not have handled it all that well, but guess what? You have that down rookie season where you sort of maybe got benched a little bit towards the end of the season. And now they got a new head coach in, and now they draft two cornerbacks. And so I would think the new coaching staff would be enough to light whatever fire that needs to be lit under his rear end. But, now you add two draft picks at cornerback on top of that, and I would say you're probably going to get his best effort this season. And if he needed a wake-up call, I think he might have just gotten it.
Brady, you and I enjoy talking leading up to the draft and through the draft, but one area that you are super well versed in that I am not at all is your work with agents. And you heard John Schneider when he talked about Byron Murphy, that John had a long-standing relationship with Byron's agent, through the years, and I think really leans into, these general managers do and these programs do, kind of lean into and trust certain agents and everything else. You and I were chatting, going into day two and some of the different picks and all the different agents that you talk to with these different players. How big of a role do those guys play at times in players landing certain spots, and how good of intel were they for you over the course of the draft?
Yeah, I think there are certain agents where GMs and just executives in general will have really strong agents, really strong relationships with, and they will trust those guys. I mean, an agent's job is to, do everything they can for their client to sell that client and to get him as drafted as highly as possible. And you don't always get the truth with those guys. And so I think it's not easy. You don't just have that kind of relationship with every one of those guys. There's got to be a lot of trust built up. And, the agent in question here is a guy named Ron Slavin, who I don't know if he's negotiated a big contract for a client with the Seahawks, but he's had a number of Seahawks clients over the years. He actually had Alden Smith a couple of years ago. And I wonder if that was part of the reason why the Seahawks decided to take that risk, which obviously was a big risk, knowing that Alden Smith's history. But I wonder if, they were comfortable taking that risk, knowing the agent and knowing, what they were getting into. And so, but Ron Slavin is a guy who's been around a long time. He's based out of Texas, so he ends up having a lot of guys from UT, a lot of guys from the state of Texas. And the reason why his name came up with John Schneider is because Schneider said he didn't even talk to Byron Murphy during the pre-draft process, partly because he didn't think they'd have a chance to get him at 16, but he also was trying to play it coy and didn't want, sort of that interest to be out there. And when you're doing that, you're relying on the agent to give you really reliable information on what kind of person, what kind of player you're getting.
All right, so let's rewind the clock then to Thursday night when they make the selection of Byron Murphy. And we can talk through all these later round guys, and maybe one or two of them will end up mattering. We'll find out. But the biggest name they took in this draft was the defensive tackle out of Texas. Why do you believe they went with Murphy over some of the other options that were available, including Troy Fautanu, Jared Ver, some of the other guys that were mentioned? Why did they go with Murphy?
Yeah, so I kind of think that their dream scenario would have been J.C. Latham falling to them at 16. Of course, that didn't happen. That dream died pretty early when he was taken 7 overall to Tennessee. He was the second tackle taken behind Joe Alt at number 5. You know, with Fatanu, look, when they were on the clock at 16 and he was there, I thought that was going to be the pick. You know, going back to a few days before the draft, there was a report out that there was some sort of knee issue that got flagged. And I wonder, I wonder if this team has taken a little bit more of a cautious approach with guys with those injury issues in college. And you know, they didn't think that Daryl Taylor was going to miss his entire rookie season in 2020 when he was coming off that leg injury. And I just wonder, since then, it seems like they have been a little bit more cautious. And so, knowing that, I obviously picked Fatanu. He was my pick for the Seahawks in the mock draft that we did. But I just wonder if and I haven't heard this from anybody with the team directly. Like, this is me just kind of speculating based on the report that was out there, that I wonder if that gave them some pause with him. And look, you saw Pittsburgh take him at number 20. They also took Peyton Wilson in the second round, a guy with some very extensive and well-known injury issues in college. So I think the takeaway there is that when it comes to injuries with early round prospects, like, it's not a black and white thing. It comes down to whatever risk tolerance you have as an organization. And I just don't think the Seahawks have as much tolerance as certainly other teams like Pittsburgh clearly does.
Yeah, and Peyton Wilson has no ACL. So that was
ACL in one of his
picks. Yeah, ends up being a second round pick. Last two quick things for me. The story kind of seemed to die. We mentioned it on Friday, and I think it was James Palmer who had the report that the Seahawks were one of three teams to inquire about trading into the top 10 for Mike Penix. I think the team refuted that, or at least I had seen some semblance of that. Do you have any background, any intel on that conversation?
Yeah, I'm going to choose my words carefully here, because I know the reporter who made that report. And I think he's a good reporter, but I can confidently say that that was not the case. In fact, I don't even think, and I said this before the draft, and I'm every bit as confident in it now as I was then, that I don't even think they would have taken Penix at 16. I just think that they liked him but didn't love him. But you know, look, the obvious connection there, I think, was such that, you know, when his coordinator is the same guy in Seattle and the offensive line coach, and he was right in their backyard, I think he was naturally, the Seahawks were naturally going to be used, you know, maybe as leverage in some way in terms of, you know, potential trade talks there of yeah, Seahawks really love him. Of course they do. Like, you know, his coordinator was there at UW and is now with the Seahawks. And so, the short version of the answer is I can say that that was not true.
And then last thing, they do have to free up some cap space, right? I mean, the cap space and the dollars and cents are pretty real. And with all of these now 8 draft picks, they've got to free up some money. How do you think they go about doing that?
I think one thing you're going to see – they're not going to cut Geno. But I think you're going to see them do is renegotiate the deals for Mike Jackson and John Rattigan. So they were restricted free agents, and the Seahawks used, I think, the $3 million and change tender – on both of those guys. What you see happen a lot with restricted free agents is teams will use, they will apply the tender, but really that's just a placeholder. And then they end up renegotiating that deal. And I think they would look at that and say, yeah, backup special teams linebacker is not going to get $3 million on the open market. So maybe you cut him and then sign him to something closer to the minimum salary. Mike Jackson's obviously started for them, but if he's their fourth cornerback, they're not going to pay him $3 million. So I think with at least one, if not both of those guys, you're going to see them bring that number down from $3 million. And then the other really interesting conversation here is, what do they do at defensive tackle with all of these players that they've got? I mean, they were not really – they were hurting for a difference maker at that spot, but they weren't hurting for numbers necessarily. And so all of a sudden you've got kind of a lot of guys there between your defensive ends and your defensive tackles. And the first thing that came to my mind when I saw them draft Byron Murphy is, okay, could you end up looking to trade one of these guys? And could that be Jaron Reed, who's 31 years old? Nothing about the way Jaron Reed played last year or you know, handled himself in the locker room would say, yeah, he's a guy you need to trade. But just from a salary cap and numbers standpoint, you know, he's going to make $5 million this year. So you could get some salary relief maybe there. And a point that Brock made, which was a good one, which is that there is only one defensive tackle taken in the first round this year. That kind of goes to show there was not a whole lot of great options in the draft in terms of defensive tackles. If other teams around the NFL didn't fill that need in the draft because there weren't that many guys available, you know, could they be looking to trade for a veteran like Jaren Reed? I think that would seem more likely than Draymond Jones, just because, like, the Jones salary is, the contract is going to be harder to trade, and he's a younger guy, and he offers you more versatility on your defensive line. So I would keep an eye on Jaren Reed. I don't have any information saying that they're looking to trade him. In fact, I ran that by somebody with the team, and they said no, that this person thought that Mike McDonald would like having all those options, but you got to create some cap space, and you may have to create some room in what is a pretty crowded position.
I still wonder whether we're going to see a little more Draymond Jones on the outside and the edge like we did at times last year. And, you know, if that's one of the reasons they feel a little bit more confident in that position, then maybe some others do, especially in rundown. So we'll see. Brady, great stuff. I'm excited about the steak. It sounded like it was pretty good.
The ribeye?
It was quite good.
Yeah, it was good. That sounds pretty good.
Yeah, I'm gonna go for a run after this just to work off some of the calories.
All right, go make that happen.
Yeah. And you join Bob Condotta with that. Some of the other guys really good. It's gonna be nice.
How's your hamstring? Feeling okay?
Yeah. Mine's fine. I heard yours is not feeling that great.
No, it's not that great. Yeah, it's kind of.
You got
to. Thank you, Brady.
Right now.
Not at the moment. Right. Yeah, this isn't a great spot for the eyes. It'll be on later. I promise. Goodbye, Brady. There goes Brady Henderson, our friend and confidant from ESPN.com. Does a great job and did a great job, of course, throughout this entirety of the draft season.
At 9 o'clock, I have done profiles for the last month or so. I'm going to give you a name, Saul, that really answers this corner conundrum, this question about why you draft two corners. I liked where you're going with all of that. I'm going to give you the name DJ Durkin, and I'm going to tell you why that name is important when it comes to these Seahawks and what they're going to do at cornerback.